gentlemen. Wednesday, March 10th, 2021. It is 7 p.m. And who do we have in attendance? Just the three of us?
Gail's coming in now.
Okay.
Hey, Gail.
Hello.
Fixture so that I don't seem like I'm in shadow all the time.
That's good.
Sometimes we get to spy on everybody's interior of their homes.
That's right, yeah.
Well, Kevin, you won't see much in the inside of my house right now.
Oh, wait a minute. Look at you. That's great.
This is actually from today.
Okay.
I like that one best.
I think that's great. That is super.
I'll have to go into my casual dining room then, just to.
Well, I'm going to. We're going to start with our Pledge of Allegiance. Warren, I think you've got our flag.
Yep.
Are you ready? Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Okay. So in lieu of public forum, we have encouraged the public to send their comments or questions to either myself or to Bob Skinner. I have to say that I've received a couple of letters, one from Jim Todd, who has asked a number of questions about the electric vehicle charging station, and we're going to take that up a little later on tonight, and just go through the numbers. And the other communication has been from Janine Lupo, who is the communications director, the community director for Johanna Hayes's office, who has given us some very, very glad news about some money that will be coming our way from as a result of the passage of the American Rescue Plan Act. We'll be talking about that a little bit later on today as well. So what I would like to do now is turn to our guests.
I'm sorry,
Kevin Wickham. Yes?
I know you go ahead and summarize the public comments that we get in, but we don't get to actually get to see them. For example, I don't have either of those letters that you're talking about. Should I?
I can actually send you the letters from Jim Todd. The letter from Johanna Hayes's office we'll be talking about that a little bit later on in terms of it's to talk about a certain amount of money that will be coming to the town of Canton.
We can talk about it then. Sure.
Okay. Yeah, we'll definitely talk about it then. So, Bob, that's all I had. Did you have anything else?
No.
Okay. So I'd like to turn to our guests, Senator Kevin Witkos and Representative Eleni Kavros-DeGraw. We've asked them to come in and give us an update on what's going on at the Capitol in 50 words or less. And so I think that probably the best way to do this is to, you know, hand the floor over to the two of you, and basically give us a little background, and then we can ask some questions. I think that would be probably the best. So, Kevin, did you want to lead off?
Well, thanks, Bob, but I'm going to defer to my freshman colleague who I've had the honor to serve with, and I do on the Finance Revenue Bonding Committee, and my mom always taught me ladies first, so
Accountability about the certification, because we got the state certification, the Canton Police Department got the state certification. The law comes out and says, oh no, no, the state of Connecticut certification for Connecticut is not good enough for Connecticut. So we can only do the national, which sounds like to me, not only is it years to go back through that process, it's cost to that.
Right.
And I'm hoping that somebody will pick up on that and say, this is an obvious oversight. Connecticut sets these standards. It has its own certification right now. We got a police department that's certified. Let's use it.
Yeah, so the national standard, I believe, was the CALEA that they were looking at. Kevin, chime in here if I'm wrong about that, because I know you're more the expert on judiciary than I am. But the Post-C is what I believe they are. That's the less expensive of my understanding, and that's the Connecticut one. So,
and self-centered, we're done. I mean,
right? No, no, no. And that was why I put in the bill that I put in And again, I knew I was told it would die, but that hopefully they could get the language in the final bill. We were not at the final bill yet, but that was the concern in terms of the financial cost and also the cameras. I mean, certainly that's a significant expense as well. And I know Senator Wickos and I had a few emails back and forth about whether or not there was money before and whether or not Canton took advantage of it. I believe neither Avon nor Canton took advantage of that money at the time to get the body cameras. So that's sort of the highest one, highest priority right now. I had also looked into in terms of, obviously the budget. Being the vice chair of the finance committee, we're just sort of getting started on looking at what we are looking at in the legislature on budget. So we will have a lot more meetings on that. I mean, it was obviously a moderate budget. Things are a little different now, seeing how, Bob mentioned at the top of the meeting, the money that will be coming in, and you may have seen numbers that we haven't seen yet in terms of what Canton is getting. That could make, a lot of changes as well. Obviously increased spending on transportation, but, we're going to see what happens. I think it's modest capital improvement projects and basically continuing with a fairly conservative borrowing approach, that debt diet that the governor talks about quite a lot. So heavy reliance
around the Department of Transportation on occasion.
I think I'm not volunteering for that job.
Well, no, but I figured Guido in your office could probably handle that. You know, Guido from the North End, we used to say in Boston. So, all right.
So we're at the stage now where a lot of the committees, other than the budget writing committees and the judiciary, are winding down their public hearings, and they're moving into the committee meetings where they're voting to get the bills out of committee, where they'll eventually either go to another committee for review or go to the House or Senate floor for action. So that's kind of where we are. So everything that we talk about today is just our guess, best guess of what may happen, because we just can't be certain about that. The bill that Eleni talked about was House Bill 6597, if that's what you wanted to focus on for the certification. My conversations are that that piece will definitely come out, because when they wrote the bill, it was not done intentionally. They thought that CALEA was the only accreditation or certification process, so it was an oversight. That's going to be fixed. There was another bill that talked about delaying some of the use of force for an 8-month period. You probably saw it in the Hartford Current. That was JF'd out of committee already, out of Judiciary Committee, so that's waiting for action on the House floor. The House of Representatives is going in on March 16th to take action on some things. Don't know what that goal list is going to look like yet. The Senate, we don't have a list of anything. We don't even know when we're going in yet, so that's up in the air. Some of the things that I think that may be important to you all that maybe focus on, especially what's going on in town right now, are some bills in the Planning and Development Committee that has to do with zoning and housing. And one of the main ones is that they remove the term character out of the statutes, which is what sometimes a town can rely on for refusing a project. And I know that, Bob, you mentioned at the beginning of the meeting, some folks wrote some correspondence regarding the electrical vehicle charging stations there on Route 44. I've watched some of the hearings, and I know a lot of folks talk about the character of town. And if this bill were to pass, that would remove your ability as a town to do that. One of the things I'm disappointed.
Kevin, if I made that.
Yeah, maybe. Mark, can I just finish for real quick, and then you guys can ask all the questions you want. All right? Because I'm in my role here, so I just want to just go real quick.
Go.
So the other thing that I'm hoping that we can reverse, I'm not on appropriations, but Eleni and I do serve on finance, revenue, bonding together, is the governor put a hold on the ECS formula, which for Canton, that's a $76,000 reduction. Although it's not a big one, it's something disappointing because we had huge bipartisan support a few years ago when we actually created the ECS formula for the town. It's based on student population. So with this incoming federal stimulus dollars, we're hoping that we can fully fund the ECS formula. And from my conversations with folks on the Appropriations Committee, they're going to push for that in the legislature's budget. So I think, I can't say you're going to count on it 100%, but I think that's something that you can probably look towards. As far as COVID goes, the state is looking at getting 137,000 additional doses this week. Right now, we're at almost 18% of the residents in the state of Connecticut have gotten their first shot. That's good news. Including in that are first responders and teachers. They are all eligible to have gotten their shots. Now it's done by age and not by comorbidity. And I got to tell you, while the governor's taking a lot of flack, I got to support his decision for that, because there's no way that you could really base it on somebody's profession, somebody's ailment. The easiest and simplest way is to do it by age. And it's the, unfortunately, facts have shown that the older you are, the more susceptible you are to being hospitalized and potentially being the worst case scenario is a fatality. So we hadn't, Connecticut's getting $4.2 billion from the federal government. I guess you guys are ahead of us on the curve as to what the towns are getting, because we haven't seen those runs yet. The public meeting proposals, those are still out there. There's no date set yet for, I know that was one of the questions you asked about, for a public hearing. I'm being told it may be the 19th, but not certain on that yet. The governor's executive orders expire on April 9th. And if what's happening in the legislature, I know we've done it in a couple of committees that I serve on. If there's things that we like that are contained within executive order, we're putting them in statutory language and trying to get those out to the Senate and to the House to be acted upon, and they're going to be upon passage. So it will continue whatever is in the governor's executive order. And this, I can provide examples if you're interested in that. But beyond that, The governor on March 19th is opening up the state, if you will, under certain guidelines. You can go on the state's website if you want to take your time and go over that. And at this time, I guess, unfortunately, Eleni and I worked very hard to have the Environment Committee raise at least a public hearing on the bear situation, the bear nuisance bills, and they refused to even allow for public hearing. So there's nothing that's going to happen as far as even as simple as not intentionally feeding bears. We just couldn't even get a public hearing on that. It was supported by DEEP, it's supported by the agencies, but unfortunately, legislators in the southern part of our state, they want to see bears. They've never seen one before in their lives. So I tell them to come up and visit the 17th and the 8th district. You know, you'll see them.
I just don't think. Yeah, I just don't think they have any concept of what people are dealing with up here, especially, you know, in proximity to their families.
Yeah, and they'll have some videos.
The last two big items, or three really, is that the COGS are going to be getting some more money in the governor's budget, about another $85,000 beginning in July 1, 2022. Fishing season is over by now, so if you see any anglers on the Farmington, that they're legally there, that they can be there. Gaming, the governor reached an agreement with one of the tribes and still working on the other one, so that's some conflict there, but hopefully that will get resolved. Another big one is the marijuana piece, still up in the air, but I think they're trying to negotiate something there. I wouldn't be surprised if it passes this time, but I think part of it is, you know, the Black and Puerto Rican caucus is saying if there's not more as far as racial and social justice in there, then they're not supporting it. And that will deflate the support for that bill. So that remains to be seen on what the governor can do, since it's his bill, how we can negotiate that to make sure he's got enough of a majority to pass it through. So that's my update, and Eleni and I will be happy to take your questions.
Yeah. Warren, it sounds like you had a ton of questions. So
I'd just like to talk. So Kevin, on the comment about the zoning changes and not allowing character as use, as you may or may not be aware, we've gone to this form-based zoning and planning about how doing the businesses and the business villages that we're calling them on that, and it's very much reliant on the exterior appearance of the building, and that it can and it presents this village image or this village character. So I'm not sure exactly what the language is going to be on that, but that seems to go counter to exactly what we just spent quite a bit of time and effort trying to establish. Gail may know if there's something extra.
Oh, you're muted, Gail.
Mute, Gail.
Still muted.
There you go. There's a bird in the background. I don't want you to hear her yelling. I'd like to add on to that, Warren, because it's a very important bill. And there's so many things incumbent into the zoning bill. And the character is one issue. But the other thing is Canton has supported affordable housing very strongly. And we are ahead of a lot of other towns in Canton in supporting affordable housing. And affordable housing is much more than character. It's providing housing for young people when they first move into town. It's providing employees to live and who work in our businesses. So it's really important that affordable housing be considered. And if the word character becomes a challenging word, let's get rid of the word character. But let's keep moving forward to enhance affordable housing.
Yeah, Gail, I don't see conflict between the two myself, but I am concerned that at the state level they may just bulldoze all that.
Well, one of the things I just will give you a briefing, and that bill is House Bill 6107, but another bill, and there's a lot of them. I don't know where they're going to go, but generally, for me, I don't support taking local control away by state mandate because. Otherwise, you know, why bother having a local land use board if the state's going to tell you what you can do? But House Bill 6430, basically, and I'll give you the brief synopsis, to allow a housing authority to expand its area of operation by by 10 miles, which will allow municipal housing authorities to develop property in surrounding towns and additionally allow the use of the 830G, which is the affordable housing, to develop properties using the court system to override local zoning boards. So, you know, I just want to put that on your radar. That's something that as a town and leaders of our town, you may want to let your elected boards know or appointed boards know that this is something to be contemplated on and whether they want to testify on it or not. Actually, that public hearing was on February 18th, so I apologize. It's too late to testify on that, but that is something that's moving before the legislature.
I think there will be a lot of changes, Joe, before we actually get there. But to Gail's point, I mean, you know, housing can be a real economic driver, and I do give compliments to Kent in terms of form-based code. Unfortunately, there's a lot of towns that have not adopted that. And, you know, I often liken it to the fact of, you know, how my grandparents started out, you know, they bought a small house, and eventually they sold that house and were able to buy a larger home. And, you know, that's how so many families started out. So we really have to think about, you know, maybe these bills aren't perfect, and maybe we need to find our way around it. But the bottom line is that when you're looking at the next generation and how they're going to be able to, I hope, choose Connecticut the way I did, the way my family did, to raise children here, you know, we do have an affordable housing crisis, and it's not just about equity. It's about the entire next generation, and I think we need to really be thinking about that and coming up with, you know, the best decisions we possibly can around housing.
Yeah. In general, you know, your smaller apartments, one bedroom, two bedrooms, will support, you know, either people who are downsizing or people who are getting their first dwelling, you know, out of college or just as they're starting out, just getting married. And you know, the single family home isn't always the first step. Quite frankly, it rarely is. And, you know, having affordable housing that provides for that is a draw for you know, for young people. And we need young people, you know, given the average age of Canton residents is somewhere around 47 years of age. We need to have that considerably lower. And it does a few things. I mean, it keeps our community vital and vibrant, because, you know, if everybody's kind of like this more or less homogeneous group economically, education-wise, and all the rest, you know, we start to lose our vibrancy, our pop. And the other thing is that if we're ever looking for, you know, some kind of public transport beyond, you know, a couple of buses a day going into Hartford early in the, you know, fairly early in the morning, and a couple of buses coming out, you know, in the evening hours, you know, we need to have those clusters of, you know, of high density that can support, you know, a more regular transit schedule. And right now we just don't have that density. You know, even in Collinsville where I live, you know, I often tell people that if I were counting the people who are within maybe a 4-block radius of my house, I've got maybe 200. You know, that's it. So, you know, that's not the kind of density that you would need to support a bus stop, you know, going from Collinsville into Farmington, which is a major employment hub, you know, or Collinsville into West Hartford or Hartford. You know, just it just makes a whole bunch of things economically unviable. So we really need that. So I did have a question about river access and just general funding for deep and the encouragement of responsible use of the river. I know that we have a few NCON officers and kind of scant resources who are stretched rather thin over. Certainly on the Farmington River, but we also know on the Housatonic River as well. Is there any talk about that? Are there any bills with respect to that area?
I don't know of any, but...
Adding personnel, no. Not for, I don't want to say, River Patrol or NCON to that focus. There's not. I mean, right now, unfortunately, the focus, if we're talking law enforcement, is on the Connecticut State Police because their numbers are so low that they're trying to do anything they can to build up the number of state troopers to handle those issues versus the ECON. But it's just a matter of priorities.
Yeah. Well, I know that you mentioned that that we had an opportunity to buy cameras, body cameras, through the state and Canton declined. I think the reason for that, Bob, correct me if I'm wrong, is that we realized that the larger expense was going to be with the archive for those images.
We had applied once before to be part of a pilot program when they were first going to put body cameras out, and that pilot program would have paid for part of that cost for the cameras. We weren't accepted into the program. Then we did seek funding from the board as a CIP project for cameras, and you know that was denied. And after that, you know, we never really went any further with it. But by far the biggest cost of that is with the storage. It's expensive.
So
it's
based on the update that we got, you know, it that includes reimbursements regarding state level joint purchasing and looking at the state to take on all of the costs and responsibility of the data storage. So that would be huge.
Yeah. So is that's in the mix?
Yes.
Okay.
So fingers crossed on that.
Yeah.
I also didn't mention before, I did put in a bond request for the completing the Rails to Trails project and had a conversation yesterday. It was a somewhat positive conversation, but you never know how that's going to go. So
right.
There's bonding and debt diet and all that, but I'm still going to actively pursue. And like I said, I thought the meeting went well. There were a few more questions that came out of that meeting, and I'll just keep chasing that down until we hopefully get it.
Yeah,
that would be awesome because that would be such an economic driver.
Well, and I will say, in terms of economic driver, you know, the focus on the project, they're being very judicial in what they are even willing to listen to, and it's in terms of economic drivers, public health, and I managed to weave all of the things together that they're looking for, because I do think, you know, we have so many more people accessing Rails to Trails now, and not just in Canton, from all over, and especially that section by the shops is such a great connector, and then when you look at the numbers that you shared about, you know, it could increase traffic 39,000 people at the shops, and that's, I think it was 156,000 that are already using Rails to Trails. You know, but it really is about the entire region. It's not even just about Canton. I mean, certainly we would love to see that, it's really important. And I think Tim had his hand up, so I don't want to cut him off.
Tim, are you there?
Thanks, Eleni. I appreciate the opportunity to talk, and I kind of want to change the subject a little bit. Welcome, Kevin, and to you, Eleni. It's great to have you guys come and spend time talking with us about issues, because you know what happens in Canton is so much directed and controlled by the state of Connecticut. And my issue is with the budget. I was on the Appropriations Committee for a couple terms, and we always struggled with how to provide enough money to towns and municipalities. You know, the property tax only goes so far, and it's almost a regressive tax in some ways. So about three terms ago, in the Malloy era, the budget passed, and the sales tax rate was set at 6.25%. And then in the deliberations, it was raised to 6.35%, so that 0.1% of the sales tax could go back to the towns where the sales occurred and provide some revenue based on the economic activity in the town. And that passed. And then, I don't know how long it took, but it wasn't even a term of months, the governor swept it all back into the state coffers, and we haven't seen anything about it since. But, you know, the sales tax rate is still 6.35, so that 0.1% is, 0.1% is still there. Has there been any discussion or any thoughts about reinstating that 0.1% of the sales tax back to the towns where the sales occur?
There's always talk. Tim, the Mercer comment that you referred to, there's a couple of different proposals out there. Increasing fully funding the pilot, it's how do you pay for it, and there's a couple of proposals that are out there, and it depends on whether it's new revenue, so it's not a tax increase, so sports gambling, online gambling, or marijuana, that could be two potential revenue sources, or is it, as folks saying, Looney's mansion tax, which is applicable to businesses as well as residents, but who knows, but we're not that far along yet to figure it out, but appropriations hasn't, we don't serve on approach, so I don't know where they are on that, but I know that that's been a constant battle from COST, the NCCM, about not being fully funded.
And I was mad in terms of that mansion tax. I voted against even giving it a public hearing. When you look at what the numbers are with that, that's absolutely ridiculous for this district, in my opinion. It's just not a good idea based on the houses that we have and the fact that it would affect, you know, I did it on the high side at 400,000, and that was 40% of the district. So if you go down to the 300,000 number, that's 60% of the district. And that's, again, regressive, and I think it hits the middle class.
And it's certainly not evenly spread across the board, because a $400,000 home in Greenwich is a much more prevalent commodity than it is in New Hartford.
Well, that's affordable housing in Greenwich.
Yeah. Well, believe it or not, affordable housing in Avon is $350,000.
Wow.
So, just to give you an idea.
Back to that tenth of a percent. You know, that doesn't require any new taxation.
Right.
It's just a reallocation of taxes that are already collected, and it was in place and swept before. You know, I'd love for you guys to, make some noise about it and see if we couldn't get it reinstated. That would be a great way to offset some of the property tax problem that we have across the state.
I'm happy to bring it up. Can't make promises, but happy to bring it up.
Sure.
Okay. Is there anything that we can do for you in terms of, you know, providing testimony? Are there bills that that you think that our input could assist you on?
I'm sure the housing bills. I'm sure anything to do with not I would love to see special education fully funded. That's, you know, the Board of Ed continues to take a hit, you know, year after year when that's not fully funded. And, you know, I had a conversation with the superintendent and the board chair, and I think that, you know, and certainly Mr. Legit has been a former teacher. I mean, that is just an enormous expense and is a detriment to our kids with the number of special needs children that we have, and especially post-pandemic, considering all the mental health challenges we're seeing with our kids. So, fully funding lots of things would be, there would be some great letter writing to happen there.
Okay, so would you encourage us to write letters or to actually provide testimony?
I think you're also going to look at what your topics are that you have the most interested in.
Yeah.
Because most of the public hearings have already happened, you know, you want to get in there, at least get a written testimony, but reach out to your colleagues across the municipal organizations that you belong to, and, you know, just get a sense of where they are, because, you know, COST has a lobbying group, CCM has a lobbying group, and so that way you're not isolated as one individual town or one little Farmington Valley area. You'll get an idea of where they are across the state, and can kind of maybe change some minds if you need to, depending on where everybody rests and that kind of stuff.
Are there any other questions for Lenny and Kevin?
A big thank you to them for coming and sitting with us for a while. It makes a big difference to us.
Yeah.
It does.
We used to do it all the time, so we're happy to be here.
And a big thank you from all of us for all the things that you're doing, all the time you're spending, you know, in meetings, reviewing these bills. I don't think people have any idea how much time and energy it takes to do what you're doing, and you're not even, you're only a month in, you know, really. So,
yeah, trial by fire, right?
Oh, it is. It is. Yeah. And you've got what? Three more months to go, right?
Yeah.
The fun. The fun hasn't really even started.
But we'll get there.
I know you will. Any guidance or any thought about on the governor's reopening plans? Do you have any insight on that, or is it kind of, you know, is it in the tea leaves or somewhere?
Well, his executive. Let me see. I guess I'm just quick for things. Beginning March 19th, all capacity limits will be eliminated for the following businesses, while face covering, social distancing, and other cleaning and disinfecting protocols will be continued to be required. Restaurants, you can go up to an 8-person table capacity, and the 11 p.m. required closing time for dining room, that continues. Gathering sizes will revise to the following. Social and recreational gatherings at private residence, 25 indoors, 100 outdoors. Social and recreational gatherings at commercial venues, 100 indoors or 200 outdoors. All sports will be allowed to practice and compete, and all sport tournaments will be allowed, subject to Department of Public Health guidance. The Connecticut Travel Advisor will be modified from requirement to recommended guidance. And then it goes on, beginning March 29th, capacity limits on early childhood classes will increase from 16 to 20. And then beginning April 2nd, amusement parks can open and indoor stadiums and outdoor venues. So
He had mentioned, you know, having festivals preparing to actually happen this year and outdoor concerts and that sort of thing. The other small pitch that I would make on behalf of the restaurants in town, you know, to the extent that you can, to continue to allow them to have that outdoor dining, those outdoor dining spaces that were sort of special during, you know, last summer. I do think that there are still so many people who are hesitant, and that will get less so as people are vaccinated and more comfortable going out. But I do think that those outdoor dining spaces have been critical to some of the restaurants not going under. So to the extent that you can influence, I would.
And one other piece of information, so a lot of people are going on my chart to online to sign up for a vaccination. But, you know, I got to tell you, do that. But also, if you're an early riser, get up every morning and check CVS. And you got to get there before, like, 8:30.
Yeah.
Did you see availability up at the Winstead? We have a lot, like three or four around our area.
Yeah. I would also say, if you have a smartphone, you can book it right on the CVS app. I've actually helped a couple of seniors book that way. You know, that said, I can download the app. So I highly recommend that as well, because people are saying, where are the appointments? Where are the appointments? Well, they're there, and every couple of days, even more open up. So you just have to stay at it, unfortunately.
And this week, as the governor announced, we're getting 137,000 doses, which is substantially more than we've gotten. So I think there's going to be a lot more appointments, as long as the different various clinics can accommodate number of folks to move them through. So people vigilant and check early in the morning.
And one last tip is a lot of sites have waiting lists. You have to be eligible. So like right now I'm not in the eligible group, so I couldn't get on that standby list, but they really don't want to waste doses, so there are standby lists at the other hospitals that you can get on and get your vaccine taken care of.
Jennifer Curtinis, the head of the Farmington Valley Health District, reports to the board of the health district that the issue is the number of doses. If you come up with the number of doses, she will shoot them. The clinics are there. They've got the capacity to do it. It's the dosages that's the supply that's limiting them. And so, I really hate to do this, but I'm going to have to give our governor a half a point credit for the way he's managed the vaccination stuff. I can't give him a full point because he's the other party, but that's okay. a half a point credit, because his approach has been, we're not wasting a single dose. We're going to put every shot in the arm, and we're going to do it if we do the waiting list, however we want to do it. And all you got to do is go to some of our neighboring states where the governors did not do that, and they throw away dosages. And then you look at our completion rate as how well we are. Again, I have to cross party lines, but I have to give a half a point of credit for doing a good job.
I think it's okay in terms of public health. We can all be one party for public health.
Yes, yes, yes.
And just the crowd of Connecticut, doesn't matter what, but the crowd of Connecticut, we're doing the right thing.
Yes.
Having been born and raised in Massachusetts, I was very heartened to hear someone from Massachusetts speaking enviously of Connecticut in our back. It was really, okay, here you go. One other thing, speaking of the public health districts, any conversations about the funding for those districts? I know they've been cut and then they got restored. It's just kind of like, you know, I think brought up for like a buck and a half or something like that. We're thinking, what is that?
The state has a statute as the minimum amount per capita that each health district is supposed to get, and has not met that obligation in about, I don't know what it is, 5-10 years, something like that now. Boy, we certainly could use it at Farmington Valley Health District.
I thought they met the obligation, it's just that it's so low. There were two
parts of it. I think they have not actually met it in some cases, but you're right, it is pretty low. I think the state is supposed to give like $1.83, and I think Canton is, we're adding like $6.50 on top of that, you know.
Understanding is it's not fully funded. I've been bringing it up, and because there was some concern that, I have to tell you, I have research looking into where exactly it is in that budget, because it's concerning. And I, you know, interestingly, when I spoke with the Avon superintendent, that was her ask. It wasn't even for school. It was the ask to fully fund the health districts, because I know that Kevin Case is doing the same thing. They're helping, you know, chase down a lot of the contact tracing and the notifications and it's too much for the staff. It's a lot of work, and it's not fair.
Didn't some of that funding come from the stimulus bill that's just being working its way through?
$1.5 billion is coming for that scale, and it's directly to school districts and municipalities and regional governments.
And it has to be spent.
You guys have used already and expended. I know Bill mentioned volunteers and equipment you had to get ready, so you should be able to use that money for that purpose.
Yeah.
So I'm sure that the health districts will get a nice chunk of that, or should, anyways.
We hope so. We certainly do hope so. Well, I want to thank you again for spending some of your Wednesday evening with us and, you know, taking our questions and enlightening us on the goings on in the Capitol. And I'm sure this is the first of many conversations that we're going to be having with both of you. And thank you again for all the things that you're doing. So,
thank you.
You're very welcome.
Glad to be here.
Okay. All right. Have a good night, everybody.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks.
All right. I'm going to move on to the appointments item, which, according to my agenda, there are. So we move on to the consent agenda, and I believe Warren, did you want to remove something?
I'd like to ask that we remove the approval of the Board of Selectmen minutes from the consent agenda.
Okay. Do you have a second to that?
You don't have to vote on it. Any member can move an item out of the consent agenda.
Okay.
You don't have to vote on it. As soon as it says it's moved out, it's moved out.
Okay. All right. So it's the order of business that we adopt what's left of the consent agenda. Okay.
Exactly. And then move on to the item that was moved immediately thereafter.
All right. So I would
make a motion to adopt the refund of taxes, that portion of the consent agenda.
Second
that. All right. All in, any debate on that? All right. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Okay. I'm sorry, what's the motion?
Motion is to approve the refund of tax portion of the consent agenda, which is the only thing left left with in that agenda if we take the Board of Selectmen minutes out.
Okay, thank you, Bob. I'm in favor of that.
Okay, great. All right, so that passes unanimously. Warren,
right.
Please let us know. I know you had a couple
sure.
of changes.
I noticed that if you look in our package on the PDF on the top of page 6 in the package, in the first paragraph there, which is paragraph 6B,
uh-huh.
there is a comment in there about the SIP planning committee.
Yep.
That has been misattributed to me because I'm uh-huh. not on the committee. So
uh-huh.
I don't remember who actually made that comment, but I remember Tim talking about some of it, but I don't remember the rest of those details.
Okay. Well, I believe that, Bill, you are on
right.
the EIP committee.
I'm just looking at the comment. That's under consideration of old business update on the streetscape?
Yeah,
it's a review of the Board of Selectmen budget.
I'm sorry.
6B, the top of the next page, that at least in the, it says, the line reads, and pointed that monies have not been dispersed yet from the first COVID relief bill. And then the part that I think is an error, it says, W. Humphrey pointed out that he and T. Leggett served on the planning committee for SIP, and there are large expenses ahead, et cetera, et cetera.
It must have been Bill.
That must have been me.
Elimination. It's all else it could be.
Yeah. Okay.
And I'm going to say it's probably the color of our hair and the color of our shirts that got
confused. I can't find that in the minutes, but that sounds like it must have been me that made that comment. So.
Okay. So you will admit to it?
Yes.
Okay. Very good.
And then the second item is on the next page, which would be page 7 of the PDF, and it's paragraph 8A, and it's
okay.
the next to last line there. When we were talking about visiting the turbo site, the Canton Hydro, it said Mr. Bessel and Mr. Velosky will visit again this Friday, several selectmen will participate in the canvas of river access points. So on, so those should be two sentences.
Yes.
Because the first sentence is dealing with Canton Hydro, and the second one is for our river access committee visiting the points. And so I would just make that separate to make for clarity.
Yeah.
Keep the two topics separate.
Okay. Makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay. Anything else on this?
That's all I had.
I've got a concern about the minutes.
Okay.
And it's under, it's on page 5 of our 13-page packet.
Uh-huh.
Number 6, consideration of old business. A, update of Collinsville Streetscape Project. Down at the bottom of that first paragraph where the motion is made, and I made it, to approve the construction and funding of the streetscape project for an amount not to exceed $65,000. I don't think that's accurate. We, the $65,000 was for the public restrooms. We're not approving the streetscape project for an amount not to exceed that much. So I think we should rephrase that because that's not the motion that I made.
Yeah, absolutely. Good catch.
I don't know.
It should be
what is the number, Bob?
It just should be, well, 65,000 is correct, but it should be T-Legit moved to approve the construction and funding of the public restrooms for an amount not to exceed 65,000 and to remove the construction of the public restrooms as part of the project.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's what the motion should be.
Yeah.
That's what the motion was.
I'll make that my motion to amend the minutes.
Okay. All right. Anything else? My eagle-eyed colleagues.
So, do we need a second on Tim's motion?
I'll second that.
No, I already did. I was,
oh, you did?
I was, yes. I was doing it.
Okay. All right, so do we have a motion to approve the minutes of the last meeting as amended?
So moved.
Okay, do I have a second? Okay. Any further discussion? All in favor? Aye.
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 Opposed? All right, thank you very much. Appreciate it. All right, we are now going to move on to the consideration of old business. And that is going to include a review of the Make It Canton marketing program with Lisa McIntyre from the Lumi marketing team. We had the pleasure of meeting with her this afternoon to look at a blossoming website. Lumi is not only a big part of that, but also a social media campaign that is already in operation, starting to build an audience for Canton. And Lisa, are you with us somewhere?
I'm here.
All right. So I hope I haven't oversold you.
I hope not either.
I'm sure I haven't. So, would you like to take the floor?
Absolutely. And I also have Shane here with us and Amanda. So we are very excited to be here and present to you what we've been working on so far. We are going to roll through a few slides. So I'm going to share my screen with everyone. Everyone able to see?
Yep.
Great. So we are going to roll into our Make It Canton campaign that we have started to bring to life. I'm going to go here. So in working with the project, our goal to market Canton was to showcase unique, vibrant culture and charm that the town of Canton has, in a way that allows audiences to feel connected to the community, engage in happenings and business, and desire to be a part of community if they are not yet. So really working on marketing Canton as a good place to connect, engage, attend, bring your business, move here. You know, I know you were earlier we're talking about housing and attracting people, so really getting that vibrant look for the town of Canton. So we have come up with Make It Canton. So we have started a push on social media, which we will show you in a little bit, which uses the Make It Canton brand hashtag. This slide sort of talks about some of the things that we created: Make It Your Home, Make It Your Weekend, Your Business, Crafty, Cow, and Cool. And then I'm going to actually let Shane talk about the campaign logo.
Yeah, and for those of you who haven't seen the logo come to life, we went through a branding kind of discovery process with you guys to do kind of figure out what we wanted it to look like and how we wanted it to kind of match the campaign and also what we are trying to establish as the voice of the campaign. So just really to simplify what the art direction that we ultimately went with is something that we felt authentic, it felt handmade, but it also felt unique to the town itself, but it also its character. We also wanted something that felt like an extension of the existing brand, and we did that by using the colors that are in the existing Cantown brand guidelines, and then something that would be versatile and could be used across a variety of different mediums, not only in digital spaces, but also in practical mediums as well.
And this slide has the final logo, which was also the start of our first social media post that we made. And these are some examples of social media that we've started. I hope you've seen it if you are active on Instagram and Facebook. We have started that since the website is still in development. This is a great way for us to capture some involvement in the campaign prior to the launch of the site, gather some content that we can use on the site, and just help us have a great rollout for that piece.
Yeah. Great.
And then I'm actually also So that is sort of an overview of the campaign. What I'm going to go into next is a digital business kit that we have created. So it's something that sort of is an overview of the campaign. We shared it with businesses. We can continue to share it with businesses to talk about how they can engage with the Make It Canton campaign, how they can help bring it to life and engage with our platforms. So this is deliverable in PDF, and I can also, I think you have a copy, but I can also share another copy so we can make sure we get it into everybody's hands. So this just kind of gives an introduction for anyone that's not familiar with what we're doing, on what it is, what the campaign is, and what we're trying to do. And then the plan. So what we've started using the hashtag, creating the Make It Canton website, which is in the process. And then here are some examples how you can help. So how the businesses that exist in Canton can help to promote that Make It Canton brand. So giving them suggestions on what they can do, whether it's adding a blurb to their posts, using the hashtag of Make It Canton, making an announcement about it, just different ways that we can really get everybody in the community involved. Information about why it's important to Canton, and why it's important to the businesses.
Are these photographs something that you guys had taken, or were there photographers in town that you got the photography from?
So that's probably something right now we're just sourcing from different online resources. I think actually in the version we sent out to businesses, it actually attributes the different photographers who were taking these. One of our things we do once, you know, right now is not the ideal time. The warmer weather this past week's been great, but it's not something that really, I think, when we're using photography, excites people in the way that some of the summer and fall colors do. It's something that, as this campaign continues to evolve and grow, we're definitely going to define, you know, what that imagery should look like. So right now we're using the best resources available to us, and we really want to build out that.
Yeah, these are some terrific photos. That's why I'm, in my opinion. So.
Yes, please.
But I'm not the artist on the board here. So. Okay, good. Sorry to interrupt.
No worries. And then it rolls into partnership opportunities. So we want everybody to be engaged. We want to be able to make sure we're sharing all of the information. So we do have an email, makeitcanton@gmail.com, where businesses or individuals can share any of their information if they have upcoming events, any questions, ideas for content. We are local here in Connecticut, so we can come to an event, we can come to an opening, we can take photos of something that we might need. So we are here and can interact really closely with the town and the brand to make sure that we're bringing it to life. So we want to make sure that we're getting that out there and that people are comfortable sharing and continuing to give us content and information to help us get the message out.
Have a brand new council that has finally gotten its nonprofit, and we are really excited to partnership with you because I think there's a lot of a chance for us to get together and work together.
Yeah, we really want to showcase how everybody, like we said, like making it Canton, so how you are making Canton unique. So we're really excited to start the partnership piece where we can do things like that with everybody in town.
That's really great. One question I've heard, from a few folks is why start the social media campaign so much before the launch of the actual website? Can you enlighten us on your thinking there?
Sure. Amanda, do you want to take that one?
Sure.
Well, a couple things. We kind of wanted to, you know, build the groundwork, really. You know, the website's going to have a lot of great resources, and it's going to have, you know, great itineraries and things like that for travel, but, you know, social platforms are really where people, you know, build community and engage and interact with one another, so we didn't really need a website for us to start reaching out to people, featuring businesses, talking to them, and then audience growth just takes a while. So, you know, if we had just launched when the website launched, we really wouldn't have anything or anyone to announce it to, you know, because it would take so long. So what we figured was, let's start building this community online. Let's start talking to people, featuring businesses, getting more followers, getting the word out. And then when the website's ready, you know, we can really help to hype up that portion of this campaign by rolling it out and having a countdown and showcasing all the great things you can find on there. So we just thought it would make sense for us to kind of get out there and start to grow this so that we can, you know, make a big announcement of it.
That's great. So it's sort of like being in a relay race and the runner is coming, you know, coming around the bend and you're the next runner. You start going, you know, so it's, you're not, you know, handing it off to someone who's at a dead stop.
Right. And we're also using this, you know, as we were talking about photography, like part of what we're going to do is be gathering photography and content over the next few months. But we're also asking people to send and share content with us that we can actually give to the website development team. So we're also kind of using this opportunity to kind of get more information that can then be put on the website as well.
Would one do that through Instagram or how? Or is it in the brochure?
We're doing a couple different ways. It highlights it in the brochure. People are, like, obviously, you know, completely welcome to email whatever photos they have and want to share. And then we're proactively going to be messaging people if we find really beautiful images and asking them, you know, for their permission to use them. And then we're actually going to build a content library where we'll, like, store all of that. So that we can, you know, use it on social channels in the future, and then also we can use it on the website or, you know, any other kinds of promotional materials.
Okay. So Instagram reports you have 306 followers right now.
Mm-hmm.
It was 305 until about 4 minutes ago.
And it was zero about a month and a half ago?
Less than that. I think it was... Oh, yeah. It's
zero? That's not good.
We had just created it, so we're just sort of entering our second month of posting. So we've made great traction. I think we've gotten really great engagement from the community, and people really seem to be embracing it on the social media platforms, which is really great to see.
Great.
Bob, I have a question.
Sure, yeah.
With regard to the website that you're putting together, is there an opportunity or a possibility to include public awareness of what's going on in town? Specifically, I'm asking about the churches. Is there a restriction on putting church content on this website for the town? And if not, what would be your process? The church that I belong to up in Canton Center, oldest church in the town, has a website too, and it would seem to me that it would be easy to integrate the two of them and any other churches that have websites, because a lot of things happen at churches that benefit the communities that they serve.
Yeah, it's just the terrific chicken pie supper
that
people come from out of state for.
I was going to say the strawberry shortcake.
Well, that's a good one, too. Yeah, the North Canton Church, yeah.
I can also share that, so we did just get a first peek. So SimpleView is the company that's doing the site. So we did just get a first peek at a quick landing page today for the first homepage. So I can share that, too. So you can see sort of how that comes to life on a site.
Oh, that's... That's Cherry Brook Farm up in North Canton.
Yep.
And we still have some adjustments.
And Vineyard.
And Vineyard
there, yeah.
A adjust the
It wasn't company. Always Cherry Brook Farm, was it, Warren?
So and it here's wasn't where you the might first Cherry Brook Farm. You might be able to integrate, you know, we're going to have a calendar of events, so if you have those,
Chicken pie supper.
Chicken pie supper, so those yes. sorts of things.
And the Strawberry Festival.
And the Strawberry Festival. So this would be a great place to feature those things, making sure we have an updated calendar of all the events that are happening.
And I'm sure the Land Trust has got a bunch of stuff they're doing, too.
So what's the process for that? Do you reach out and try to find some kind, all of these groups that are providing public activities, or do they need to have some clearinghouse, some place to come and ask to be included?
It'll be a combination of both. I don't know the capabilities of the website. I would assume once the site gets up and running, there will probably be a place where things can be submitted there to be included on the calendar of events. Currently now, since the site's not up and running, we are asking people to share events, and we are looking at different sites and places that we can find events going on as of right now.
I would add, you know, talking about Chicken Pie Supper and the Strawberry Festival, there's one other event that happens at our church up in Canton Center that anybody of the male gender can enter, and it's called the Great Men's Cake Bake Off. Happens in February, and we give prizes.
I didn't
and,
know that.
Until this past year, it's only the guys that can make the cake, and it's a hoot, and it's a wonderful activity. So I'll be looking to figure out how we can advertise that.
You bet. Okay. Well, you have almost an entire year to.
I need 11 months of practice, so that'll be okay.
So, Lisa, how do you interact with the web developer? What's your relationship with that group? And like, for example, there's no Make It Canton logo that I saw on this mock-up. But that I wouldn't expect that. So, how do you interact with them? What's your role?
So it is included. They did use it as inspiration for a lot of their design features. They do have it. The Pages Box here at the bottom of the page. They did use, sorry, I'm scrolling quickly, at the top. So
okay,
this Making Canton is the same. And then a variation up here with Canton, Connecticut up there also.
That's good.
And they did take cues from the colors that we had selected. We'll be working with them. So we did the branding, the campaign. They're working on all of the website pieces, but we'll be working with them for content creation, photography, and all of those pieces as we roll into those next steps.
Yeah. This is exciting. I think this is, you know, it puts a real panache on us and takes us to a whole other level. You know, so I'm very encouraged by this, and hopefully this will, you know, the audience will continue to build, you know, in and out and around Canton and beyond, you know.
That was my question, Bob. How does this get spread in and around and beyond? Because it's it looks wonderful, but you know, as a tourist attraction, as a representative of the town, we want to spread it. So I'm curious as to how you do that.
Yeah. So right now, really, it's that engagement with the social channels that we have. So you sharing content with us and us sharing that on the channels, and then if you have social channels that you can share our information on, that really starts growing the following. And that's sort of how we've been growing it. You know, there is down the line opportunity to do paid ads and paid to get people to the site. So, you know, there's a few things we can explore as we get a little further on. But right now, really, it's just getting all the businesses to interact and awareness. And I think, you know, we're still really early on in the stages of it. And like I said, the social channels are still really new. So I think as we keep going into the months and continuing to be active and engaging all the people and working on partnerships and getting out in the community, I really think it'll grow very quickly.
Yeah.
And we're excited. I myself, I maybe shouldn't admit, I had not been to Canton prior to this. But I have not lived here my whole life. And so I am actually very excited to be able to share everything that I've learned about Canton. I've been there a few times now. So, you know, you've already gotten one fan and one person that's attending. And I think, you know, as it grows and as it more awareness comes, I think just we're going to have more of that following too.
Yeah, I'll tell you, it's an easy place to fall in love with.
Absolutely.
Really is.
So do we need to put Shane and Amanda on the spot?
Sure, of course. Shane, Amanda, it's your turn. Have you been here?
Yes, my mom lives in Canton, and I'm from Simsbury.
Oh, great.
All right, okay.
All right.
I'm the native on the team that is always trying to get them to come visit me. So I was very excited for this project and to have the whole team like involved so that they can come spend more time with me now that we're working remote.
That's good. That's good. All right. Well, this is really great work. I really appreciate your insight and all the things you're doing. I think a sign of the quality of the work is that it looks easy, you know, and I know that easy doesn't come easy.
Thank you, and we're thankful that you've selected us and that we're getting to work on this great project. We're really excited to keep growing and get the website going and get the content on there, so we're really looking forward to all of the next steps that we have coming up.
Great. Can somebody refresh me on what our approximate schedule is? For this website ready, go live.
Midsummer.
Midsummer.
Yeah.
Okay, and that's to go live with the website, but the social media will try to keep growing that until then.
Yeah, the soft media or the media is like a soft rollout for the website. So
Makes sense.
You know, promotional for eventually get the readership up, and then when the website comes out, there'll be an audience in place to try to roll that out to.
Okay. Yeah.
The things we probably want to start getting excited about before midsummer would be the farmers market and the river access, the rails, all the outdoor stuff that starts happening in the next month.
Yep. Absolutely. Okay. This is great. Any other questions for Team Lumi?
Just the only comment, a couple of comments I wanted to throw in here is, again, the earlier we can roll all the stuff out and get the publicity out there, the better, for a number of reasons. But, you know, I'm thinking as part of our pandemic recovery here, you know, there are a lot of businesses in town that are still really hurting and reeling from this pandemic. And all this publicity and good marketing is another good way to get them back on their feet again and get them going in a positive direction. The other thing I would just throw out here also that, first of all, I want to compliment the team. The look of everything you've got here so far is really sharp and very, very impressive. But the other comment I just wanted to make is, you know, unfortunately, I think Canton over the years has gotten a real reputation, a bad reputation with developers and people that wanted to come here and invest in the town. And the town wasn't very development or business friendly. And I'm hoping that this kind of marketing, you know, at least subliminally will help people see that we're doing our best to try and turn that around and trying to make it a welcoming place for new businesses and people.
Yeah.
We actually, we just started reaching out to, within the social channels, to some of the businesses that are just now opening up. Little Oak Cafe, I think C41 is going to be opening next month. There's an organic also control like platforms like all the things CT and We Heart Heard that we can leverage to help to amplify the message even further. So we're kind of working with them to help their openings grow the Canton channels on their own, and then really like highlight, you know, like you mentioned, coming out of a pandemic, how much help everyone's going to need, and making sure that everyone has all the information, especially about what events are happening or not happening, because there's always a lot of questions around that. So we're excited to be able to use these platforms to let everyone know where they should be going.
Now you're going to be pitching some of these some story ideas, I would imagine, out to media as well. Is that part of the program?
Yeah, that's part of our plan. As soon as we have a good idea, you know, I think a lot of things event-wise are in flux, but we do want to start pitching like the campaign in its entirety too. We just wanted to kind of give the channels a little bit of time to grow and have some great content. We definitely want to make sure that we're getting some media focus around when the website launches too and the features that will be on it. And like Lisa said, you know, doing some paid advertising as well and then also earned media.
Great. That's great.
If you haven't talked to the Canton Land Trust, they have a terrific set of trails networks in town, and I know they've got always kind of a lot of activities going on. I thought of that when we were saying coming out of the pandemic and into the springtime, and a lot of hiking and such that we like to do around town.
Yeah, we're really excited to focus on the on all of the like fun outdoor activities. We're all ready to be outside.
Yes, we are. We most definitely are.
Yeah, the Land Trust website has, you can think about it, but the Land Trust website has all of the trails listed there. And so if there's a link, that would be great. But I'm sure I could connect you with anybody if you have any questions. I'm not sure what you want to do with it just yet.
Yeah, I think, and we can pass this along to you guys. We were planning to start... in April, we'll put the whole pitch together, but we wanted to do a month by month in Canton and just kind of do it for now because we only have the social media channels, but kind of have it be like what to do in May in Canton and then have it be a variety of not just events but also activities, you know, like hiking, things like that, kind of rolling it all into one, and then what can you do, you know, in June and like, you know, when it starts to get warm and all of those like kind of fun things. We kind of wanted to do our own little, you know, monthly what to do features. So that would be great.
There's going to be a summer trail challenge coming up where it's to hike all of the trails and record them. So
great. That would be perfect. That would be great.
Now, your guys are going to be giving us traffic reports, engagement reports, all that kind of thing. So sort of track how this is going and where it's going. I think this is wonderful. This is truly where we want to go.
Good. Great.
Okay, other questions for Team Lumi? Going once, going twice.
Are we going to have them come back
yes,
in April or whenever, however?
Yeah, probably also. May, I think. End of April or May, I think.
Excellent. Okay. Good.
That'd be great.
Great.
That would be really great. Okay.
Guys,
thank you very much. Very helpful. Very
great. Thank you so much. Have a great rest of your night.
All right. You too.
Thank you.
I'm going to, I'd like to start on the consideration of new business, but I know that Tim had an item that he was looking to add to the agenda. Tim, are you? Did you want to do that?
Yes, thank you, Bob. I would like to add an item to the agenda to have a discussion about the cost comparisons regarding the electric charging systems that stations that we. Are part of a grant process with the state to get charging stations put up in, I don't know, what did we decide, 5 or 6 around town?
Something like that, yeah.
And the thing I want to discuss is I want to come to some better satisfaction about our decision not to put credit card availability installers in the charging stations because there was a sense that that would cost the town more money than if we just do the present arrangement, which is to let people charge up for free. And I didn't feel like we talked that through enough to my satisfaction, and I wanted to just go on the numbers for a while, and I was hoping that somebody had numbers.
All right, let's why don't we do the first let's do this in order. So Tim, you'll make a motion to add that to the agenda.
Yes, and I just did.
All right, do we have
I'll second that.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, it is so ordered. Now the question, Bob, we have in item 7, consideration of new business, we have B, set the date of the annual budget referendum, but we don't have an item A. So would this go in on as A?
Not new business.
Yeah, this is kind of a consideration of old business.
Old business?
Yeah, you can put it under old business, B. You're right, that does start off with B. I'm not sure why, but you can take it up as B, old business, which means you can take it up now.
Okay, let's do it. All right, so I know, Bob, you've worked up some numbers on the charging stations, both with and without card readers.
Yeah, somewhat. Just as background, when you looked at this before, what you had was the additional cost for putting in the card readers, just the upfront cost, the capital cost, was going to be about $10,000 to put that in. And the discussion was, well, it's an additional $10,000 to put it in, plus there is an annual fee to operate the card readers, that there's software that goes with it, there's a licensing fee, there's a 5% fee you have to pay to the credit card company, and I think there's another fee. And it was determined that between the $10,000 and these fees, it didn't seem like it was worthwhile to put the card readers in. I would say we looked at this once before, and when we put the charger in Town Hall, it's a 2-port charger, so it would be 2 cars. At one point, when we first got the grant and put them in, it had to be there for 3 years before we could put a card reader on. So part of the grant was the first 3 years had to be free. That's not with the current grant you got. That was with that particular charging station. At that time, when that 3 years was up, in order to determine whether or not it was worth putting a card reader on at that point, we asked that a meter be put on the line that goes specifically to that charging station, we could tell how much electricity that was actually using. And so 11 months later, we looked at it, and it was using 4,421 kilowatt hours per year.
For
11 months. For an 11-month period, it's 4,421 kilowatt hours. And so if you charge that out by the basically 17.24 cents per kilowatt hour at that time in 2017, worked out to $762 a year of electricity we were giving out. It was going to cost us about, at that point, about $2,000 to convert it over to a card reader system. Plus it was, I don't have it in front of me, but I think it was somewhere around $500-$600 a year for the service or the software. And so at that point, the payback on it would have been like a decade. And so we just said it's not worth doing. And plus the cost of maintaining it, you know, nothing lasts forever. And so we didn't do it. So part of the conversation when this came up was that, well, our experience when we looked at it last time, the numbers really didn't work out then either. And so between those two things, between the $10,000 for the capital cost and the ongoing cost, decided it wasn't worth it. I can tell you, I looked at it again. I asked Glenn, our project administrator, because he's the one who's overseeing the project, to give me new numbers and new figures. And I think what I can do is probably share them on the screen and go through them with you, but I'll give you advance warning. It's not the easiest thing to read or understand. But let me see if I can share the screen. Okay. Can you, you can see those numbers?
Yep.
I can, yes.
Okay. So, if you were to take in 2017, the annual amount would be about 4,822 kilowatt hours. The meter that registers our kilowatt hours is cumulative. So, it just adds it up year after year after year. So, when I heard you wanted to take another look at this, we went back and looked at that kilowatt meter. That kilowatt meter currently reads 11,000 kilowatts. That thus just makes no sense. There's no way in 4 years, it only went up 6,000 kilowatts. It just wouldn't make any sense. So what we did is we measured the amount of kilowatts over the past 5 days, which turned out to be, I think it was 105 kilowatts. Multiplied that times, you know, figured out the daily kilowatt rate, multiply it out for the year, and it comes out to 7,665 kilowatts. So what I did is I took the measurements we got in 2017, the measurements based on just that five-day period, and then kind of averaged them to come out with 6,243 kilowatts. So our best guesstimate
for what
right
period,
now,
Bob? 6,243 for what period?
60 years. Well, that's an average. So that's taking
for
how much stuff for 12 months.
For how long?
12 months. For 12 months.
12 months. Okay.
For 12 months. So that's 6,243 kilowatts. If you multiply that times the rate that we're paying for our electricity, it comes out to $1,022. So it'd be $1,022 for every two ports. So that when you have one charger, it's got two ports because it's got a charger on each side of it. So it's $1,022. We have essentially six chargers. We have a total of 12 ports, so six chargers. So if you multiply it out, it's about $6,000 a year in electricity. So what does it cost?
Well, and you're making an assumption there that all the chargers are going to be used about the same amount of time as the town hall charger.
Right. And you know, let's face it, the one probably at the library may not be, the one at the DPW facility may not be, the one at the high school maybe actually used a little more. You know, it's hard to say, but that's why we kind of averaged it out.
And also, if we're trying to make projections about how much these two numbers are going to compare, you know, the costs for putting the credit card reader and the maintenance is not going to increase percentage-wise as much, perhaps, as the cost of the electricity, because when people find out that it's there and more people have electric cars, there's a chance that the use would increase at the chargers. So it's hard to compare the two numbers.
We were assuming that it was going to increase significantly when we put the one in town hall. Quite frankly, it hasn't. Just from anecdotally, you know, seeing it every day as I drive there and park, but also the numbers on the meter don't indicate that it's increased dramatically. But if you look at, so these are the annual costs for having the charger. I mean, having the card reader. So the 64. Data plan, because it works off cellular, is 60. Based on $1,022 worth of charges, there'd be $67 worth of funds we have to pay to the credit card company. And just in general, something's going to break on one of these, so you figure a yearly average of $50 of maintenance comes to $441. So it's going to be $441.33 the cost of paying for reading the credit cards.
For how many stations?
If you figure there's six stations, that's per station.
Per station. So it's 441 times six.
Right. Yep. Yeah, I find it easier just to look at a per station, you know, mm-hmm. scenario. So to break even, you would have to make back the money on the original electricity plus the maintenance. So you'd have to make $1,464 in charges. So we'd have to charge the cost per kilowatt would be 23 cents per kilowatt. Right now, that would be 43% greater than what we currently pay. Because as a municipality, we pay the business rate. It would be about 13% higher than what you pay as a resident, which is 20.39. So that's one way of looking at it.
So if how much would it cost to charge a car then? That rate.
Oh, that's a very good question. If you look at the next line, it says cost per 75 kilowatt battery. So if you're trying to charge a 75 kilowatt battery and you were on it completely empty, wanted to charge it completely full, it'd be $17.59. Now, if you include the additional cost, which would be the additional capital cost, it was $9,576. For the capital cost. That's the cost of actually installing the readers. Remember, what I just went through is just the cost you have to pay every year for the software and so forth. But you have to pay $10,000 to actually install the readers. So let's say you want to recoup that cost over a five-year period. Then the amount per kilowatt hour goes up to 29 cents per kilowatt hour. So it becomes, you know, significantly more expensive. And then if you look at, so what would that be as compared to the residential rate? If you went home and plugged your car in, it'd be about 40% greater than what it would cost you to plug it in at home. That 75 kilowatt battery would go from $17.59 an hour for fill up, $21.42 for fill up. You know, essentially, it would cost an additional one way to just look at it is you're going to have to charge significantly more than what the person would have that would be paying to fill it up at home in order to recoup the dollars, the cost of putting the additional cost of putting in the electrical charging. So, you know, you can certainly do it. I guess it depends on if you want to charge everything it would take to recoup the money. There's going to be a premium for hooking up to that charger versus what they would do if they just charged it at home. The other thing is that the way you normally do it is you wouldn't really do it per kilowatt. You'd do it based on an hourly rate. So if they were going to charge for 2 hours, they'd be charged a certain rate, or, you know, it might be by 15-minute increment, something like that. Almost like a parking meter. But it would be based on the idea that, you know, you want to recoup your money. So you have to charge a certain amount or you'll be losing it.
So, Bob, I'm the one that asked to have this brought forward tonight. And one of the reasons was I hadn't really had the chance to analyze it the way you've just done for us, based on all the details that you've shared. And I just thought that we got a couple emails. I don't know how many other people got them from people who thought that that was and they don't have this information, thought that it would be unwise to just give the power away without trying to recoup it. And so I thought it would be a good exercise to go through this that we've just gone through. As you've shared it here, I'm very comfortable with our decision not to install the card readers. And there would be an opportunity, in some, you know, if we have 1, 2, 3 years more history about this and changed our mind, is it a problem to put them on later?
I did ask whether we could retrofit them. You can retrofit them. At that point, it would be, I'm going to say it was like $400 more per machine than it would be to do it originally. But I think that's a small price to pay if you decide to retrofit them. What I would say I don't think it's a bad idea to set them up, see how often they're used, see which ones are used more. Our thought when we had looked at this previously was that we had looked at the possibility of putting some actually on Main Street. And the reason to do that was to do it as almost, you know, an attraction to bring people into Collinsville to the shop or eat the restaurant, because at least back, you know, a few years back, when you had an electric car, you were kind of tethered to a grid. You ought to be able to, you know, you're going a distance, you ought to be able to find a place to recharge that car. And there are websites that have on it where all these recharging stations are. So our thought was, we put one on Main Street. It's not really geared towards staff or even again residents, geared to bring other people in. Those we were actually going to put credit card readers on. And at that point, we thought, you know, the person who's coming here is probably going to expect to have to pay something where their car's charging up while they're in a restaurant or shopping or something else. And it just, at the time, it didn't work out. I think it became too complicated trying to run electricity out to them. We just didn't move in that direction. But these, I look at, are geared more towards students, towards staff, you know, maybe the patron to the library. It's not really geared as much to the general public. I think the one at DPW would be geared a little more to the general public because it would be for people using a bike trail or, you know, maybe the boat launch someday. But most of the other ones are geared more towards staff. So I just look at more as a benefit that you would give to staff, the students using it, that kind of thing.
A lot of that is speculation because we don't know how it would play out. And, you know, it's speculation about whether to go with card readers or not, because once it catches on, it's hard to know how much more attractive they're going to be and how much more accessible and how much more people are going to use them. But I just wanted to have a chance to take this snapshot tonight, and I appreciate you putting it all together so that we could. And I'm totally comfortable with the decision we made whenever we did, based on having a good definitive look at it like you've just provided.
We are continuing to look at whether there's other more cost-effective ways of putting the credit card reader on it. You know, at some point, if we have one that's getting a much higher usage, maybe that's the one we put the credit card reader on. You know, like the one at DPW, it probably wouldn't be used that much, so you got a question as to why would you put... You're probably going to lose money by putting, you would definitely lose money by putting a credit card reader out. Maybe once we get it installed, we find one that's being used more than others. Maybe that's the one we put the credit card reader on. You know, figure out what the most cost-effective way of doing it is. But for right now, you know, the decision was to go forward without the credit card readers.
So I think Make It Canton. This is such a positive thing. We're talking about Canton and talking about the word character. This is forward looking. The makes Canton ready to receive as of 2035, all of the General Motors cars are going to be produced that are going to be electric. We're moving like ahead of the curve to do this. I think. can retrofit if it turns out we want to do that later on the fly. But right now, to put them in as an attraction, I think that's a great thing to do.
And where they're situated, for example, in the schools, I don't expect a lot of the public to go into the schools unless you're associated with the school, teacher or student, to leave your car there and charge it up. I still look at it as it's more just a, you can think of an employee benefit or a benefit to the students. Town hall, you'll get the public coming in and parking. And they do. They'll park overnight and park and you know, fill their car up there. That one's already existing. We know what the usage of it is, and it's not huge. The other ones, I see it less being used by the public just by their, because of their location. So.
And Bob, I wasn't starting this conversation to rehash whether we should do this project or not. That wasn't part of the concern. It was simply about the money and whether we should think about card readers or not. And I'm comfortable not doing it at this time.
Well, and, you know, we're doing our homework here by re-examining this. I'm glad that we're not painting ourselves into a corner with this either. Like Bob said, down the road, if we wanted to retrofit one or all of them with card readers, that's still an option for us.
Yeah, and the market, I think, is going to change for this as... use of electric cars, you know, it becomes more widespread. And as commercial entities start to deploy, you know, electric charging stations. I mean, at this point, there are no electric charging stations in Canton aside from the one that we have in the town hall parking lot. You know, I would imagine that in the next 3 years, that's going to change. So, and then... what that equipment is, I mean, how quickly it charges, what the rates are to charge. I mean, it's going to be a very different ball game in a couple of years than it is today.
Plus, the commercial chargers will be different. They're going to be high-powered chargers that will charge your car very quickly. Right. And you will pay a premium for that type of service. Here, we're essentially talking about a triple charge that takes, you know, hours to charge your battery, just like you would have, you know, in your house. So... they're talking about two different types of chargers, really.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask. Does it take about like 3 or 4 hours to do a 75 kilowatt hour?
Yeah, I really don't know. I don't know one myself. I know it's interesting. Like when I looked at this prior in 2017, the average battery was 40 kilowatts. Now they're between 75 and 100. So it just tells you, you know, so many improvements they've been doing and been able to get additional mileage. And, you know, it's only a matter of time before you will see a substantial amount of the cars are electric. The other thing I'd say is you look at where they put in the electric charging stations. It's usually at businesses. You look at the Hartford or Aetna or any of the larger travelers, larger insurance companies, your larger companies. That's where you'll see them. I have a whole bank of them front of the building, and they encourage their employees to come in and you know, plug their cars in and fill them up there. Schools have them. You look at your magnet schools, they'll have them out in front of those. So, you know, I think where we're putting them is consistent where we, you know, they seem to be going nowadays, and it just, you know, it seems to be the right thing to do.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you very much, Bob. I really appreciate all the research that you put into it. And Tim, I appreciate you bringing this up and asking for this to be put onto the agenda. I think it was good to have those numbers and for the entire board to see what they are.
Right, and Bob, I brought it up in a very narrow context. I wasn't trying to question the whole program at all. I just wanted to be comfortable with the numbers, and I hadn't done that. So I appreciate the board hanging with that for
absolutely. That's why we're here. You know, that's how we roll. So good. All right, I'm going to move on to new business, and in that we have setting the date of the annual budget referendum. It looks like we're going to have one, and we would like to set it up for schedule it for May 11th. And that would be held at the Canton Community Center. It would be a live referendum. So I would take a motion to approve that date, May 11th. Does anybody want to do that, and then we can discuss it?
Second.
All right. Discussion, background, anything?
Yeah, the charter requires that we have a referendum on the budget. The referendum must be held by the second Thursday in May. The 11th is the second Tuesday, so we left ourselves 2 days to spare. The other reason we picked that day is because that's when the register of voters would be available to assist with the referendum, since it is a full day election. Last year we didn't have to have it because under executive orders, the governor basically said you could do that process virtually and outline how that process would be done. This year, every indication is that will not occur again, and I think it makes sense. I mean, if we could have a presidential election and bring 90% of our population to a room, I don't know how we say we can't do it for a budget referendum. So we're planning on moving forward with it. The one issue that's kind of out there is with the presidential election, we're allowed to use the absentee ballots. It wasn't really no excuse, but it was the governor designated that COVID was sufficient medical justification for using absentee ballots. That isn't there now. That was there just for the presidential election. And so it looks like, we won't have that use of the absentee ballots that we had before. Plus, the timing's different. Using absentee ballots, there's certain time frames that go with it. We've only got 2 weeks between the time period of the public hearing and referendum, and so it really makes it difficult to use absentee ballots anyways for just during that 2 week period. So it looks like most people voting will have to be voting in person. It's not possible to get an absentee ballot, but you have to go down to the town clerk's office, ask for it, fill it out, bring it back.
The usual procedures would have to be followed for that.
In the past, because of there's a long period, you set the ballot in September, you vote in November.
Right.
You literally, now you're talking 2 weeks.
Right.
You can't mail the ballot out, wait to get it mailed back, you can't go through that regular process. So it really, at the end of the day, means most people are probably going to have to show up for voting in person. So we're going to have to make sure that we take the precautions and social distancing and, everything that we had to do for the presidential election.
So any further thoughts on that?
Move the question.
Okay. All in favor of the opposed? Okay. And that's it. We are now into communications. The one communication that we had was on the electric vehicle charging station, and that was not the one over on Albany Turnpike, proposed for Albany Turnpike, but actually our policy and using our proposal to provide it for free at the town hall and other locations around town. So I think we've handled that. The other piece of news was the announcement by Johnna Hayes that as a result of the passage of the American Relief Package Rescue Plan, that the town of Canton was going to receive somewhere in the neighborhood of $1 million from the town from the federal government in direct aid, and that the school system, separate from that $1 million, was going to receive approximately $400,000. Now, I think Bob sent sent a spreadsheet out this a few minutes before the meeting, and that those numbers are a little more precise. The town's going to get $1,010,000, and the school system will get $395,000. We're starting to get some guidance as to what the criterion are going to be for spending that money, what that money can be actually used for. And so once we get that and it's clear, we'll be putting together a list of potential uses for that money, and then we'll bring it to the board probably next month, you know, next meeting, just to talk about what those possibilities are and which do we feel are the highest priority for.
I wouldn't. I don't know if those will be ready by the next meeting. I wouldn't rush that process. In other words, you know, I think we need to have a real. First, we have to determine what we can spend it on. Secondly, I think we really need a full review of all the options. What's the best programs? What will really meet the public's needs? What will, you know, benefit the general public? I just think that it's a substantial amount of money, and it's going to take. There should be a process involved in determining, you know, where those funds are to be expended, and I just don't think 2 weeks, the next meeting would have. One, we may not even have the information where we can spend it by then. And two, we wouldn't have had all the due diligence as to, you know, what all the programs that could be used. So I think it would be a process.
Yep.
Could some of this money conceivably go towards our budget items, such as the fire department's breathing apparatus or something like that? Or is this going to something like that?
I thought of that one before the meeting, Gail.
Yeah, sorry.
You know,
that's COVID-related.
How about the police cameras?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if the police cameras are COVID-related. I mean, that's you know, one thing you have to think about. I'm not sure whether you do. The other thing you have to think about is, okay, let's say we spent it on the breathing apparatus and the cameras. And let's say a grant comes along to pay, would have paid for the breathing apparatus. This thing would have paid for the cameras. Now we wasted about $500,000 on projects that could have been paid for elsewhere, from elsewhere. So that's where I just think we need to make sure we do our due diligence and not rush to expend it to fit the first hole that comes up. You know, it seems to me it's a big chunk of change. It should benefit a lot of people. And we just need to be careful, think through where we spend it.
Yeah. I think Bob's exactly right. We have to be careful about this and do it in such a way that people understand why we're doing what we're doing and are behind it, you know, and support our decision.
You know, I also think it may not be just one pot we put all the money in. I mean, there may be a number of different programs out there or organizations we can support with the money, or, you know, business support, or even that marketing website. You know, I mean, there's a lot of different places where that money could go, where it might have the greatest bang for the most amount of people. So
I could get my river access at the Public Works Department. That's COVID related.
The brownfields underneath the Axe Factory for health purposes.
We can generate all kinds of great ideas here. Just give me a few minutes to wind up. Now, I think, Bob, we're right. We got to go back and do this systematically, methodically. We don't want to just keep, oh boy, we got money, let's spend it as fast as we can. Idea about, if we're already spending it on COVID in the budget, let's try to apply it there. That makes so much sense to take our time with that.
Right. Yeah.
I think between now and the next meeting, what we can do is try to figure out what the criteria is and where we can spend it.
Yeah.
You know, start there. Okay, what's the parameters around what we can spend it, and then figure out, you know, what's the best place and where it's going to create the greatest bang for the buck.
And I know, like,
well, you know, my mom had COVID. A month and a half ago, and she recovered nicely. She wasn't really that sick, but in the process, I had to call the visiting nurse, and the visiting nurse that we use in Canton is headquartered in Granby. So perhaps we could upgrade a program or add to the process to make it easier for the visiting nurse to come to Canton, or any kind of health possibilities that we could upgrade to help people in Canton. That's, you know, that's COVID-related, even if it's indirect.
Your budget right now includes money to pay for the visiting nurse that comes to camp, just so you know.
Yeah.
There's a lot of items for the visiting nurse.
Even for example, the additional funding we had to give Farmington Valley Health District, you know, certainly COVID-related. So.
Yeah, right.
And there's a certain amount that can be used for reimbursement. For example, you know, we lost a lot of revenue on Park and Rec. You know, that might be a place we could get some money. Again, yeah, perfect example. Money we had to spend to Farmington Valley Health. So maybe what we ought to figure out what our losses are first before we start spending what we're going to have to get. Figure out we're going to expend an additional amount.
Wasn't there some overtime issues too with the?
So some of that though, remember we are receiving about $130,000 above this,
right?
From the state, we're also getting $40,000 in from that storm that nobody can pronounce that came in September. Was it Icelsis or whatever? They declared that a national emergency. We're getting. Our declaration of emergency. I think we're getting $30,000 or $40,000 from that. So, you know, we've got some funding coming. Put it that way.
So, Bob, maybe you have a chance to take a look at where some of the holes are, or where we've already expended it.
Yeah, that's something that we can do. Figure out where we spent.
I'd like to make yourselves whole on that. Right.
So that's that's one bit of big news. The other bit of big news that we just received today is that a new developer, actually the one that's been very interested in the Axe Factory for a little while now, has a signed sale and purchase agreement. They have an 11-month due diligence period.
We think. We haven't actually seen the purchase and sale agreement.
It's right. But you say it exists. Right?
And it's signed. How many times has this happened before?
It has happened a few times before.
Because the qualification is that they have that 11-month period for due diligence. And so... it's not signed in stone yet at all.
Right. That is correct. They did make it all the way to the closing one time. Yeah, you're right.
And we've also had folks come to the closing and not close. So,
yeah,
you know,
exactly.
This is, you know, let's put it this way. It's another step down the road. And, you know, so it's, you know, obviously it's good news. You know, it's closer to the news that we all are looking for. So, you know, just, you know, keep it, you know, we can't really make, beat the drum yet. The developer has asked that we not go large with this at this point, but just so you know that's in the wind.
Bob, is any of that COVID related?
I hope not. I really hope not. And I think that's about all that I have. That's all I have.
All right. Just a couple things to go over with you. This is kind of a heads up. We are looking at bringing to you an application for a corridor study for Route 44.
The corridor study
is what's called a corridor study on Route 44, and what they do is engineers will come in through DOT, and it's mostly federal funds, and they do a study of that particular portion of the road and say, okay, what should be changed in this area to basically make the road better? In our case, we had a corridor study done on Route 44 probably 20 years ago, and a little bit of it was implemented, some of it wasn't, a lot of it wouldn't make sense now. So we're looking at applying to go back and do another corridor study. The big thing about the corridor study is, one, it will recommend, you know, positive changes for Route 44. The other big thing about it is, if you're going to get any kind of funding to do major changes on Route 44, it's best if you have the corridor study done first, and then you point to what the, what's in that study, the Journal of Funding, you should get later. The, you know, some of the big things we're looking at is the biggest issue we've had there, the Dowd Route 44 intersection. We've always wanted to change that. That needed to be changed. That would be part of that study. We're looking for the study to more than likely be from Lawton Road to East Hill Road, that section of Route 44. We're looking at intersections, ability to do left-hand turns. The other thing is trying to get Route 44 to work better with our form-based code. Right now, Route 44 is set up in a way that you really don't have buildings out close to the road as you would under the form-based code. So Neil was talking about some changes that can be done with 44, so be more consistent with the form-based code. Figure out what things we could do with 44 to maybe enhance the village area, areas that already have utilities. So there's a lot of different things that can come out of a corridor study, but it's a highly competitive grant. But we think it's important to you know, shoot for it, see if we could get it.
What's the time frame, Bob?
Well, the grant's got to be in, I think, late April. Which doesn't leave us a lot of time to prepare it. When the answer comes back, that I don't know. I mean, a corridor study can take years to do. It's not something that's done quickly. They're usually pretty involved in pretty important projects. They choose wisely before they approve one.
We've also had a really good track record with these type of planning grants also. Which I would think that would work in our favor.
Yeah, we have. So EDA reviewed it last night. They endorsed it. It's going to go to planning and zoning, I think, at their next meeting. And then, you know, eventually get the application done and bring it to the Board of Selectmen. I guess one of the reasons I want to bring it up, because I don't want Neil spending the hours it's going to take to try to accomplish this if there was a feeling on the board that no way we'd ever want to do this kind of thing.
Does it take a look at the density of traffic lights as well? The traffic flow, that'll be part of that?
It'll take a look at everything. Traffic flow, traffic timing, entrance, exits off of 44, you know, all those type of things. Yeah.
Well, in my opinion, if all we could get done was to make the Dowd Avenue Route 44 intersection safer and easier to navigate, that would be worth it for me.
Yeah, so, I would hate to wipe out the bandstand.
Yeah, and if you look at the older proposals for that, it did. We might have to move it a little bit, but it creates the green. It just creates it kind of in a different location.
And move it to Canton Center.
That'd be one option. No, I mean, there's still a green in that area. It's just basically you eliminate that kind of spur of Dowd Avenue that goes down towards 44.
I got you.
You turn and kind of go by the bandstand out to 44 right there. But that was a much older version. They may look at it now and suggest something different. So, all right. So I'll tell them, you know, obviously it's subject to your final approval, but at this point, to proceed with it.
Yeah. I know, Bob, I know that this Dowd Avenue and Maple Avenue, that's a state road too, correct?
It is.
But this study would only be, this corridor study would only be for Route 44.
It would be for Route 44 and the immediate area where roads go into Route 44.
Yeah.
Yeah, it wouldn't go down like Maple or something like that, no.
Because when I was in the legislature and talking to Pam Sicato from time to time, she said that there was interest in creating a rotary there at Maple Avenue and River Road.
Yeah.
And I can't imagine the amount of fill that they would have to put into the river to get enough room to create a rotary right there. But
Tim, think about the rotor away in 55 when the flood kit took out there.
Right.
Well, the other thing, Tim, just imagine if you were a poor pedestrian trying to cross that thing.
Yeah, that's right.
You'd go around.
Really, it's hard enough to do it now.
All right. The intention was just talk about future meetings. At some point, when the governor starts lifting executive orders and we get some new guidance as to what they expect future meetings to look like, we're going to have to transition from really virtual meetings being for health and medical safety reasons to, you know, how can we use virtual meetings in order to increase participation in our regular meetings? I think that's really the way to look at it. So we're looking at some kind of a hybrid approach where, you know, we'd all be in a room, but people would be able to get on online and be able to participate remotely, virtually, kind of the same way we're doing right now. And so, you know, we're going to be looking at, you know, what additional technology we would need to be able to do that. I'm sure there'll be additional equipment. But, you know, we're moving forward. I always want to brace you that, you know, the way we do meetings in the future may be a little bit different. And eventually, well, I think in a few weeks, all of us will have had our shots. And so, you know, at some point, we are going to be back in a room together. We may have sneeze guards between us, but we'll be back in a room together holding some kind of a, probably a hybrid meeting. So we just need to kind of prepare for that, work forward for that, figure out what, you know, how exactly that works. You know, what impact is it going to have on other boards and commissions, and how are they going to function, and so forth. It's an interesting time period. I mean, there's a lot of things that came out of COVID which are really horrible, but there's some things that came out of it that may be a benefit to, you know, being able to communicate and have, you know, maximum participation in meetings and those kind of things.
We talked about, you know, one of our goals is communicating with the residents of the town, and it's, well, I believe that the video teleconferencing has some kind of role to play in that, so that people that get down to the community center, that they can get snippets of it online, or I don't even know what the solution is, but I believe it's going to incorporate.
Yeah, I mean, it's even beyond that. We've talked about having a camera videotaping us and then sometime the next day putting it up online. That part would be easy, but we're talking about now we'll still be having meetings with people still being able to go online and then actually participate.
And interactive. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yep.
So,
if we're going to keep the cameras in online and in motion, then I propose that we wait until we get that shipment of spray on hair, at least in my regard, you know, so that I can.
I think I read the federal legislation. It's okay to use our funding on that. So I'll bring that proposal forward at the next meeting.
I don't need that yet.
Okay, I just want to brace you for that a little bit. And actually, along the same lines, we will get some help in that area, in that we now have an IT specialist. The governor named John Lass has accepted the position. It'll begin at the end of this month. He's got lots of experience in IT, working on at a number of different levels, from, you know, the network level down to the help desk function, and seems very good. He's worked in the private sector, but he's also worked as a consultant. I worked with different municipalities. We checked with those municipalities. He got very good references back. They all thought he did a really good job.
He's very motivated
to come out.
When's he starting again?
End of March.
End of March, okay.
Yep.
And how do you spell his last name?
L-A-S-S.
Lass.
And I'll be keeping the consultant on probably through the end of April, so there'll be a transition period between the two. And then, he'll take over. So we're all excited about having her on board, having him come in and start working. And, hopefully things will work out well. And, you know, one of his tasks, along with others, will be to, you know, figure out this whole meeting process and how we move forward. So
yeah,
that's good. Personnel changes. Sergeant Rodriguez has gone on deployment. He is in the National Guard, and he has been deployed to Africa for extended period of time. We believe it could be somewhere around 10 months. And so we can't leave. We need supervisors on shifts. So we have temporarily appointed Jonathan Lederman as a sergeant, and he went through a selection process. We opened it up. There were three people who applied. We went through our normal appointment process, interviewed everybody, and he was appointed to that position. And he realizes it's temporary. When Sergeant Rodriguez comes back, he'll go back into that role. But
is there a pay raise? Is there a pay raise accompanying the rate? Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. So he'll move up in that position, but it does leave us one person down. So that obviously will impact overtime, unfortunately. But it is what it is. So just to let you know that occurred. And then at the last meeting, I went over the OSHA violations with you. We did have a meeting with the OSHA director, and he was impressed with everything that we were able to complete in the time period, and they reduced the fines, basically reduced them by 50%. So it went from $6,340 in fines to $3,170. There's still a couple items that are outstanding. We're working on them. But 98% of them. So that's all I had.
All right.
Just one quick question, Bob. Anything new on the streetscape RFP since our last meeting?
Yeah, we got the RFP back from DOT. We made most of the changes. Presented to me in the last week. I read it over yesterday. I had some changes that I wanted to see made and concerns. I sent it back to Glenn to kind of redo those sections. It's going to come back to me one more time, then we'll get it back to DOT. You know, we hope to get it out on the street. I wanted to get it back to DOT end of this week, and then hopefully by the end of next week, if we can get DOT's approval, get it out on the street, and then have it bid opening last week in April. April 29th, sometime in that time frame.
So do the contractors on that have to do just a lump sum bid, or is it an itemized bid?
Yeah, right now the way it's broken up like, really there's two parts. There's six different sections.
Right.
And they would bid on each section. Each section has unit prices and amount of units, and so it's broken down, and so there's unit prices, then they add all those up to be each one of those sections, and then those are all added up to make up the base bid. And then on top of that, we took a number of items out and made them bid alternates. So that way, the hope is that the base bid comes in within budget amount. Then if we have some left over, we can look and decide, okay, out of these bid alternates, which ones can we add back in? So anticipating that, there could be some budget issues. We took more out than we were originally going to and have it be as a bid alternate. For example, we have in there trash cans. We don't believe what the estimate is for the cost of these trash cans. They're like, really, like $1,000 trash cans. I can't imagine what they're made of. And so, we put those as a bit alternate. I was choking on them in the first place. Now, remember, that's the designer's estimate. It doesn't mean a contract is going to
be
in. But still, they were a lot. So we put that in as a bit alternate. Drainage. We took that out and put it as a bit alternate with the idea is if we don't award it, DPW will do it. So that we'll do it as an in-kind service. So we made some changes along those lines in order to make sure that we try to get the bid in at budget. So it'll be easier to award the base bid, obviously, if it's within budget, and then just figure out what we have left over to be able to add in back in as add-on.
And you'll want to try and do all this hand-in-hand with our normal pavement management and our paving of all those streets in that area.
It is. We the pavings is going to be done by us. And that's outside the contract and will be done with payment management funds. Yep. And the hope is to start it this summer. It's interesting, the designers had a 335-day construction period, which means that it would run through the winter. which, and I'm not sure how much of this project you can really do in the wintertime. So there may be a short shutdown, start back up next spring, and then finish. I think it's the way it's kind of looking at now. What we want to do is find a good break period, so there's not a lot of disruption through the winter, and then start back up in the spring. Any other questions?
All right, Gail, do you have any news on the Arts Council, by any chance?
I do. we have a lot of good things happening, and we've got our EIN number, which means we're real now, and we have applied to the town for our $1,000 because we're ready to spend, not to spend it, we're ready to bank it. We have a draft website already, which we're going to present at our next board meeting. It's like we go in fits and starts, but all of a sudden, lots of things are coming together. We have a plan for, I think I may have mentioned this last time, but we have a plan for activities. We have a plan for publicity too starting. So a lot of coming together with Make It Canton. I think there's a lot of potential. So this summer, I expect there's going to be stuff happening.
That's pretty exciting. Yeah. So if Make It Canton could even host the whole website for you too, then you don't have to worry about the cost of that.
We thought about that, but you know, you need to have a Canton Arts Council website. We can link it to Make It Canton, but I think you need to have a place where people go just for the Arts Council.
Okay, all right.
Absolutely.
And it's not expensive. We're doing it on the cheap.
Oh, yeah. And just so you know, Gail, on my little project, looking for spaces for art exhibitions. Yeah. I've gotten three landlords who have said absolutely. Just give us the give us the parameters around it. JR at over the Fialkowitz, he's willing to do it. The shops are absolutely willing to do it, and I'm trying to think of who the third one is. But yeah, we've got a few.
Bob, if you could send me those, I'll present that at our meeting. That'd be in 2 weeks. That'd be fantastic. I'm sure we'll have people who will take it up.
Yep. But I'm sure that Mr. Borchardt, Borchardt up there with the little schoolhouse over by the church, I believe he'll be very receptive as well.
I'm sure of that. I'm not sure that's a place is it visible, but it's a great little church, and so that's a place where we could do activities too. I mean,
and it's kind of the idea of spreading the arts and spreading people through town to see more than just sort of like the typical stuff. So
we talked to Bill about that, and he has offered, and so that is a possibility. Definitely. That's not so much the storefront, but that's a different activity.
Right.
If you ever get really desperate, we used to hang art in Town Hall, too. So.
That's right.
That's wonderful.
I'm serious. We used to have artists, they'd come in, and probably every 6 months we'd switch out the art, and they'd have price tags on it, and I don't know how many they ever sold, but they're up there, and it certainly beautified Town Hall. So.
I think that's definitely a good thing to do, and if we ever get plays going in the Farmington Valley Stage, to put up art along with their plays is something that we've talked about. And even music, if you have a play, you have art, you could could have a little chamber music going on, and there's so much.
The First Selectman's office, not you very much. You could just move right in there.
I would sure do that. Yeah, he's only in there like one day a week, barely. So yeah, I'd definitely do that. But yeah, the bank, Collinsville Bank, is is open to it as well. So so we'll keep collecting these folks, and then it's a matter of just, you know, pulling it all together into an event or a weekend or, you know, some kind of a program. But
even so, a floating kind of thing, you know, 1 month an art exhibit here, 1 month an art exhibit there. Depends on what the artists want to do too.
Right, right. And now we have a vehicle to promote it. Great. Yeah. All right, so that's all I have. And I think that's all we have, right? I guess then the last thing to do is to get a motion to adjourn.
Move we adjourn.
Okay.